the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers your Arizona Cardinals. With me is my co-host, Seth Cox from AvengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and he is also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. We are recording episode 474 on a Tuesday night, as we normally do, the first of two, hope maybe three shows that we will do. Well, Seth and I will do two shows, and then after that, maybe I will, hopefully I will have a third show this week to preview their Week 7 game against the Seattle Seahawks. But this show, episode 474, is all about what happened against the Los Angeles Rams. We've got reactions, we've got QB fun, and we've got roster decisions, things that have happened, things that could be coming. It's going to be exciting. I mean, Seth, I'm not sure how much more we can say about this, but the Cardinals seem to be following quite the familiar script, and that is start strong, play competitively in the first half, and then fall apart in the second half. I don't, it was not long ago that we were talking about how this is a good, bad team. I'm less likely to call them a good, bad team as just a frustrating bad team, because you could tell that they are, and I guess they're playing the first half of most games. It tells you this: they're a well-coached team. They're a well-coached team that's prepared, but are severely undermanned and under-talented and ill-equipped to handle adjustments on the fly.
And that's what it comes down to. They just can't, you know, I call it the counterpunch. They just can't counterpunch. You know, they end up playing well the first half, and then in the second half of games, they are just outmanned. And when they try to counterpunch, they just don't have the guys, the people that can do it. So it's just, you know, becomes a huge issue. And it's not, I mean, let's be honest, it's not overly surprising that it's that big of a deal.
We both kind of projected, we expected them to be 1-5 at this point. Like,
right. And I think the biggest issue becomes that they are just so thin. And so, you know, even with Jonathan Ledbetter back, his first game back, he didn't look great. I think you would agree with that. You know, he didn't exactly look great. This team just lacks talent up front. And so to see how this is all, you know, playing out, it just shows that this is a team that it's just slightly devoid of talent, and they're just trying to keep up. And you know, as the injuries persist, it just becomes a situation where they can't compete enough to keep things close, unfortunately. And you know, it's tough. I mean, like you said, it's not a surprising thing, but it is disappointing at times that's what happens, right?
It is. I mean, here's the numbers. Second half, they've been outscored 98-30. They have not scored more than 8 points in any second half. They were shut out last week. They were shut out on Sunday twice. Well, they gave up 31 points to the Giants. They gave up 20 points to the Rams. Let me see if I've got that up there. So yeah, so twice this season they've given up at least 20 points in the second half. They gave up 17 to the 49ers. Their second half output has been 3-8-7-6-6. You do that in the second half of games, there's really no way you can, there's no way to win unless you do what they did to the Cowboys and held them to 6 points in the second half. You know, they've given up. They gave up 10 to Washington. They gave up 6 to Dallas. But they've allowed multiple touchdowns in 4 of their 6 games in the second half. 31 points, obviously, to New York. 14 points to the Bengals. 17 to the 49ers and 20 to the 49ers. It's... Is it just they run out of gas? I mean, the way that the Rams, and we'll go specifically to the Rams game, this was a Rams team that attempted 3 rushes the entire first half and then came out and ran the ball 8 consecutive times for 68 yards or something like that, or 60 yards before Matthew Stafford drop back to pass and scrambled for 2. So they had technically 9 consecutive rushes before there was the touchdown pass. And it was just absurd. The fact it felt like that 2013, 2014 Cardinals or against the 49ers when there was like this one drive. I can't remember which season it was, but San Francisco basically, they put together like a 14 play drive. And ran the ball. It just took the absolute life out of the Cardinals then. And the fact that this was telling, this kid was on the TV broadcast, that Sean McVay's Rams had never done more than 5 consecutive rushing attempts in any game since he took over in 2017. This was after only running the ball 3 times in the first half, and they decided, well, let's try this. And the Cardinals just, they had no answer. They had no answer for it.
Well, let me give you some other numbers that are distressing. You look at Josh Dobbs and you look at his splits, and it's really interesting to look at it, because if you look at him from a first half to a second half, he's virtually the same quarterback. He completes just under 63% of his passes. He has 571 yards in the first half, 644 yards in the second half. I mean, that kind of makes sense, right? You're trailing. You're going to need to gain a little more yardage. 3 touchdowns in the first half, 3 touchdowns in the second half, 1 interception in the first half, 2 interceptions in the second half. So, I mean, nothing outrageous, right? Like, not crazy. He's been sacked 4 times in the first half, 7 times in the second half. So you look at it and you go, hey, across the board, this is not bad, right? Like, your first half to second half, you have pretty much the same quarterback. But, and thanks to the guys at Pro Football Reference that do all of this, we can break that down even further. And the quarterback that plays in the fourth quarter is genuinely an awful quarterback. And that's part of the issue as well. You look at Dobbs' first and third quarter stats, and it kind of coincides with what we're talking about, that they make halftime adjustments and they come out and he plays fine. I mean, he's 26 of 33. That's 78.8% completion percentage for 264 yards and 2 touchdowns in the third quarter. In the fourth quarter, he's 36 of 66. That's less than 55% for 380 yards, 1 touchdown, and 2 interceptions. He is averaging under 6 yards per attempt, and his AYA, which for those that don't know, you know, kind of what that means, that's your adjusted yards gain per pass attempt, and you want to good quarterbacks are typically over 8. His fourth quarter is 4.7. Jeez. He's literally playing like one of the worst quarterbacks in the league in the fourth quarter. And that's obviously a product of something that you've talked about quite a bit. You get Josh Dobbs and you let him be a guy, right? And it's fine. But if you get Josh Dobbs and then you ask him to do anything, it becomes, I don't want to say impossible because that makes it sound, you know, that's disrespectful to a guy that's playing the best ball of his career, that's, you know, putting forth great effort, but he's just not good enough. He's not talented enough. And that's right, you know, where the issues come in. And you look at it, it's, you know, it's unfortunate because it shows the biggest issues with this team is it's a, you know, it shows that the combination of poor defense and then asking Josh Dobbs to do too much is basically a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. And I will say that there was not everything bad about that game. There were some things to like. They were strong early. I mean, they didn't score a touchdown. That's troubling. They didn't get the end. But they did have some success running the ball. It wasn't great. I didn't expect that to be great, but they did get Keontae had moments. I will say that Keontae is very frustrating to watch when you're used to James Conner. But Damian Williams wasn't bad. DeMarcado, it appeared that they just had him back in his third down role, basically, where he is there. Their third down, they're blocking back for pass in the passing game. It looked like Hollywood was going to have a better game because if you watched Hollywood, he was wide open the entire game. He has been, and he continues to be absolutely cooking. And Seth showed me a tweet that Hollywood have that, you know, how cryptic is it? And it just says separation with all the split, like. I don't know if that means anything off the field, but if you watch the film, Hollywood's getting separation pretty much on every route he runs.
Yeah, and you know, there were two plays obviously that are big in that game that loom large, and those were the plays where Josh Dobbs just missed him. Were unable to hit him. One was underthrown and allowed the defensive player to make a play on the ball. The second one, obviously being the one where he threw it and it let him out of bounds. You know, and that's just frustrating as somebody watching, obviously, that, you know, you got a guy that should be able to make throws because there was no pressure, there was no issues. But I mean, it's kind of been an epidemic in the NFL this year, and you just kind of go back and watch it, and you've seen it all over. You had Justin Herbert miss Keenan Allen on a couple throws on Monday. You know, we're recording Tuesday night. On last night on Monday Night Football, where Keenan Allen was running wide open. I mean, literally nobody near him, and he just missed. And you're like, what is going on? And so, you know, those are all frustrating things to see that have been happening, and you hope that those get rectified. But right now, you know, it's been an issue, and hopefully we're able to see that get cleared up. And if not, you know, if it doesn't get cleared up with Dobbs, hopefully at least if and when Kyler Murray comes back, it's something that they can do in a positive manner.
Were there any other positive notes that we saw in that game? It was good to see Victor Dimakeji pick up another sack, Kevin Strong picking up a sack for the second straight week. But those are just plays.
I thought overall the offensive line wasn't bad. I think there's a huge issue that we see with Dobbs in that his internal clock is kind of bad too, right? Like he doesn't see hots and he takes sacks, and that those led to a couple of his fumbles in the game as well, which are what problems are, you know, and you want to see him get worked through that and be able to make plays in that, because that's just an experience thing from a quarterback, right?
Yeah, it really is. You have to think It's been how long since he's been at, like, his days at Tennessee when he was a starting quarterback and getting regular reps, because he wasn't doing it other than in the preseason for the Steelers and the Browns, then getting the two starts last year for the Titans. It just wasn't happening. I will say, you know, one of the things that I wrote, kind of jokingly wrote about it. It's like, this week they're playing the Seahawks. You should start Ken Walker, and you should start go ahead and start both Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, because we can almost guarantee, unless DK's out, but the Cardinals are going to give up big numbers to somebody, because we look at the last look at the games that they had. Like, fantasy people love playing their guys against the Cardinals. You know, Daniel Jones had 3 touchdown passes. Saquon Barkley scored 2 touchdowns. Tony Pollard had 122 yards. Then you've got Christian McCaffrey, who had 179 total yards with 4 touchdowns. Brandon Ayuk had 6 catches for 148. And Jamar Chase goes 15-192 and 3 scores this last weekend. Cooper Kupp, you had Kyren Williams, 158 rushing yards and a touchdown. Cooper Kupp, 7 catches for over 140 yards and a touchdown. Like, they're not doing a good job of limiting the opponent's best players.
No, they're not. And, you know, it is an issue, and it's something that they've got to figure out. Now, the one thing I will say is, or won't say, but we can watch, is DK Metcalf has been, and this is something we'll talk about obviously on Thursday, but DK Metcalf hasn't been good this season. But of course, we've said that about other players and teams, and then they go out and just kind of blow out the Cardinals. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen with that.
And interesting to see Starling Thomas get some playing time. I think, you know, Keytrell had some trouble, but I don't think Marco was as bad as he had been the previous weeks. I think we saw some improvement from Marco. I think Keytrell is going through some growing pains right now. And it'll be interesting to see if we have a move toward Garrett Williams, because, yeah, he's got to have growing pains too, right? He's just coming back. I can't imagine that once he's activated, he'll have a significant role on defense. I would imagine they'll slow roll him like they've done with B.J. Ojulari all year.
Right, exactly. So, you know, it'll be one of those things that we'll have to see, you know. And, you know, with Ojulari, you mentioned it'll be interesting, because this is a team that hasn't done a great job bringing along or slow playing guys. Like, it's kind of all or nothing, right? You got Paris Johnson, you've got Michael Wilson, you've got Keytrell. Dante Stills. Yeah, you got Keytrell.
Dante, he would have been brought on slower.
Right, it was just a necessity. But, like, it's just really interesting. Why can't they get these guys? It'd be the one small criticism I have of this coaching staff thus far, is that they haven't found a way to slow play guys in like B.J. Ojulari, and you know, we'll see again, like you said, what they do with Garrett Williams, because so far it just hasn't been pretty. But I'm looking just at the numbers, and you know, it's not, I don't want to say it's surprising by any means. I think you would agree with me. But to see Ojulari, his numbers at 85 snaps, you know, and that's...
You don't notice him on the field.
Right.
you see him out there like, oh, he's out there. But like when he's playing, you don't see him making any real impact other than you see, oh, there's number 18.
Right, and that's been the biggest thing. Now, he did have a huge uptick in special teams snaps this week, so who knows, maybe that's at least part of the slow play, right?
Yeah, that certainly could be, absolutely. Coming up next on the Resume Series podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the web, let's talk about the Joshua Dobbs situation. There is some discussion. I mean, I don't think it's within the team, but there's definitely some chatter brought up by those who cover team fans. Is it time to move on from Dobbs? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Mr. of Cardinals Talk on the web. Josh Dobbs, who, you know, before, like, when things were going well, there were people saying, hey, Dobbs over Kyler. No. But now, after three games in a row of not great play, and especially two were bad. Like, his second halves the last two games have been bad. He's turned the ball over. The one thing that we knew that we were able to do, get with him, was protecting the football. After week one, he was not turning the ball over. Now he's throwing interceptions and fumbling the ball again. He's got five turnovers the last two games. You can tell that the passing game is not as in rhythm. He's missing guys down the field. He's not making throws that he should be able to make when guys are open. And that has led to the question, should they move on from him? Should they, you know, while we're waiting for Kyler Murray to be back, should Clayton Tune get a shot? I'm always loath to do that, especially, and I'll say this again. There's no need to bring in Clayton Tune, because it's not like you, unless he's been amazing in practice, which, based on the fact that they moved on from Colt McCoy and did not even give Tune a shot, tells us kind of what their plan is for him. And there is, their plan is, we don't want him to play this year. They don't want him to play. They want to develop him. And they don't necessarily view him as a future potential starter, because young players, especially on a team like the Cardinals, if you have a young quarterback that you think could be your starter, you play him because you let him take his lumps. They're not doing that. And in a situation with a young quarterback and Kyler returning, I don't want any discussion about Tune replacing Kyler. I don't want that conversation. I don't want anything to do with it. Maybe he's a star. Maybe he's a stud. I don't believe that, but I don't want any, like, if we're going to be bad, might as well just go with the veteran, go with Dobbs until Kyler's back. And, you know, honestly, if we're going to move him from Dobbs, maybe Kyler's back this week. I don't think so, but hey, why not just, you know, bring back Kyler and see what he does.
Right. And, you know, we'll see how it works and where it goes to, but it's an interesting dynamic in that they just, I think fans are just kind of tired of seeing how bad they look at times. Right. And that makes it tough to decipher if you really want to just keep watching it, right? Like, if you want to continue to be hopeful that Dobbs will figure it out and that the second halves will clear up, or you're like, well, this isn't going to happen, so let's just get to somebody that's better, right?
Yeah. they decided to roll with Dobbs. I mean, why not finish the job? I can't, right. You know, and I just say, the question is the downside greater? I think absolutely the downside is greater with Tune. Like, what we have seen from Dobbs is ability to, in the first half, follow a game plan, execute a game plan, and be in a good position in the first half, and things just fall apart in the second half. With Tune, are you going to be able to get that? I don't know, obviously, because we haven't seen what he's done in practice, but I think that we can trust Tune to play as smart as Dobbs has thus far? I don't think so. And it's not like Tune didn't have accuracy problems with guys down the field in the preseason.
Well, it's not like Tune didn't have accuracy problems coming out of college either.
Right. That's if you're not going to see any upside, you might as well, because you're not looking toward the future with Tune. You're looking for a week or two or three for Kyler. And so, I don't know. It's the inevitable arc of a backup quarterback. We, like Colt McCoy, what have we seen from him? Like we'll even go back to Gardner Minshew is the same guy. Ryan Fitzpatrick for most of his career was this guy. Like Fitzmagic was a thing for three games.
Right.
And he finally was able to level out his play a little bit more towards the end of his career. But you have some really, really good backup quarterbacks. But if you play them for 7-8 games, you're going to see why they are backup quarterbacks. And this is exactly why Joshua Dobbs is a backup quarterback, that he's not a starter, is because the best that you can get from him is what we've seen in his best games. Like that is the ceiling, and you can't expect that ceiling to be reached on a consistent basis.
Right, exactly. And that's what it boils down to. And you know, the reason he's a journeyman and he's a decent backup, and we've talked about this with Colt McCoy in the past, right, is like you've got guys that can do it for a week or two, and then from there it becomes really hard and they're not very good, right?
Yeah, but do I like Dobbs moving forward as the backup? Yeah, absolutely.
I think so. I think he's earned that.
Right, I think he's earned, like, and I think I hope, he's, I heard that, I think I, he's earned legacy backup status, kind of like Drew Stanton and Colt McCoy did.
Right, and I just hope that his performance at the end doesn't taint what he was in that situation, because it wasn't bad.
Oh, absolutely not, absolutely not. Now, would I rather Kyler be coming back this week? Yeah, I do. Would this be a tough game for him to come back after only 1 week of practice? I don't know what his, like, I would think that based on what we've seen from this coaching staff, is that if Kyler is designated to return this week, that it will be with an eye on 2 to 3 weeks of practice before activating him, I would guess.
Yeah, and I would agree with that.
Coming up next, go ahead.
I think I was going to say, I think their goal is to avoid him having to play Cleveland after what we've seen Cleveland do.
It's true.
San Francisco.
Maybe. Coming up next on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's talk about the roster. Kyler, Garrett Williams, the surprise release of MyJ Sanders. That's coming up next on Rise Up Seaward. You're back on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. We've got Garrett Williams on the last week of his window before he needs to be reactivated. I expect that's going to happen this week. Kyler is on the verge of being activated from PUP, not activated, but designated to return from PUP. If it's happening this week, you probably will have heard it before this show drops. But let's talk a little bit about the news that came out on Tuesday. First, from Adam Schefter, is that the Cardinals were going to end up releasing second-year linebacker MyJ Sanders, one of their two third-round picks from a year ago, unless a deal came up for him. It did not end up happening, and he was released officially. What's your take on just the whole scenario? Because it does feel weird that, you know, they opened his practice window literally Thursday, so he had 2 days, not even a full week of practice. He got 2 days of practice, and then on the very next week, before they even start practicing, he's gone. I don't know what to think of that exactly.
It just screams to me that they didn't see whatever it was, and I'm not saying what it is, what it isn't, but whatever it was, that they did not see what they wanted to see out of him. But you and I talked about it. Like, this was a guy that was probably going to get cut anyway.
Right. Based on there's no good way to keep 7 outside linebackers on this roster. And there were 6 guys that they actually loved. And there's like Zaven Collins. They love him. Dennis Gardeck. Love him. Cameron Thomas. They like his upside. Even though he hasn't done much, like he's made a few plays, he's been quiet this year. Victor Dimakaji has really emerged. Jesse Luketa, they weren't going to cut him. And their second round pick, BJ Ojulari. So MyJ's spot on the roster was just when they kept him and then put him on IR, I was like, okay, Okay. And the fact that he was part of the uniform reveal also suggested that there were plans for him. But then he was hurt all the preseason. And like on even on the depth charts, he was listed at the very back. I don't know what to think about it, because is it more about the numbers or was he not a fit?
So, I mean, you talked about it. I mean, we both did, but you were very, you know, you were very profound on the situation of that. Like he seemed like the odd man out, and it seems like that was a truthful statement, and that this was a situation where he just didn't fit with this group, right? And that they had differing opinions on his abilities and what they needed from him, and he just didn't seem like a guy that fit. And I said this, and I'm interested on your take. He is, I don't want to say probably better, but he is likely a better edge player than Zaven Collins, who has not been very good at that position. However, one of the things that we've heard glowingly about Zaven is how open he was to this change and how coachable he is in this entire scenario. So, I mean, and we're not saying anything negative about MyJay, but extrapolating that, it does make it seem like it potentially had something to do with just his fit within the organization itself.
Yeah. Well,
and that was kind of what we said with Isaiah. It's not that they're bad guys by any means, but one of the things that I think that we've seen them want is guys that are selfless and are willing to do whatever the coaches ask without question or you know, anything of that nature. And again, we're not saying that Isaiah or MyJay did that, but you know, it may just come down to a sentiment that that's what ended up happening. Is they said, you know what, we've got, like you said, we've got six guys before him and they're all bought into what's going on, and he wasn't buying in as well. Not saying he didn't buy in, but like he wasn't playing as well or buying in as well as these other guys. And so we, you know, we're just going to cut bait at this point.
Well, and like in fairness, he wasn't drafted by this regime. He wasn't drafted by Monty Austin Ford. So we don't know what the evaluation, we don't know where they valued MyJay coming out of college. Like kind of what we've seen with some of them, they saw Zaven more as an edge than an off-ball guy, even though we thought that he was a good fit off the ball. They viewed Isaiah more of a defensive back. And I haven't seen this from any of the insiders. I had a follower on Twitter at me and tell me that some insiders are saying that he was struggling picking up the system and maybe is not all in on football. Maybe that's the case. I have not seen that anywhere.
And like we said, that would, we're not saying that's what happened by any means. I want everybody to really kind of understand that, but it would make sense to go to that drastic of a stretch, right? That's why they moved on, because other than that, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. Now that's, and though the one thing we'll say is it'll be interesting if it was more a numbers game. And now I don't know, because he was released while technically still on IR, although designated a return, which means he had been medically cleared, if he is eligible for the Cardinals to bring him back to the practice squad if he goes unclaimed. And honestly, I don't know why anyone, like if there was a team who wanted him, I don't know why they wouldn't have traded like nothing for him, because
right,
because the like salary wise, there was no risk at all.
None. No.
So I don't think he'll end up getting claimed, but maybe he will. But if he goes unclaimed, I'd be interested to see if he comes back to the practice squad, because if he does, that suggests it was simply more of a numbers game.
Right. That'll be what but here's the other thing, and we talk about this all the time, you and I especially talk about this on this podcast or with you and I just, you know, personally talking. Our fans love the idea of a player much more than they love the reality of a player. And that happens so much that sometimes they look at moves and they go, I can't believe all they got was a seventh round pick for Isaiah Simmons. Well, I mean, Isaiah Simmons he doesn't play a whole lot for the Giants. I think he's less than 50% of snaps, and people can say, oh, well, you know, he just got there. What do you expect? Well, I expect that a team that's devoid of talent on defense and not playing well on defense would find a way to utilize a guy that, you know, is supposed to be otherworldly in terms of talent. He's playing 35% of the snaps for the Giants. And, you know, he's still having the same type of problems. Like, he's still not good against the run. He can't rush the passer. So you're seeing the same things. Rashard Lawrence, you know, you and I were, I don't want to say surprised, because obviously we saw it coming based on his usage in the preseason and training camp and more training camp. I mean, something, I guess we can talk about it now, right? Like, during training camp, that guy was not playing very much. And you and I were like, they're going to cut him, aren't they? Like, this Rashard Lawrence. And so, like, I think fans love the idea of what a player is. And then he's on a practice squad. Like, that's all he's doing right now.
Yeah.
And so it's not that they're bad or anything like that, but I think fans get overly like, oh, I cannot, like, he's the next, you know. And that's my question. Like, we all acknowledge that they made a mistake with Hassan Reddick. I don't think anybody doesn't acknowledge that. But outside of Hassan Reddick, who, you know, other than Tyrann Mathieu, who just wanted out, right? Like, it's not like they've made, I mean, the biggest one's probably what, Calais Campbell, of thinking he was done, and now he's put up 44 sacks since he left, you know, the organization. Like,
yeah,
it's not like they've done a poor job.
Here's the thing with Hassan. In any other team's situation, would they have done something different based on what you'd seen in the body of work? We ourselves, when we said, you know, we could bet on that, give him, especially with, now, I don't know if he would have taken the same type of deal that he got from Carolina with the Cardinals. I think he accepted that after he was, you know, disrespected by the Cardinals. But yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, it's interesting, just kind of the type of characters that we expect, that this regime expects. And it feels like, this just came to mind, I don't think this group would have ever even considered Robert Kimdichie. You know, they want all football character off and no questions off the field about anything. When one of the biggest concerns about Robert Kimdichie was his commitment to football.
Right.
And
if that is, and like we said, we're not reporting it. We don't want anybody to think that that's what's going on. But if that is what's, you know, a concern about MyJ, then this makes sense, right?
Yeah, it does. It does. Maybe he comes back to practice. Well, then you see, maybe he's got a little something there. Because then you can, if there's an injury, you can always bring him up. But yeah, and you know, I know he bulked up. He is closer to about 260 now. 265, I think, is what he's listed at. He was lean when he came into the league, and that isn't the size of the guys that that they like on their edge. Like, they like Zaven-sized guys. Now, Gardeck's an exception. Demakeji is built big as well.
But Gardeck is an exception in the way that he's also the least utilized pass rusher.
Yeah.
Of the group.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like they utilize him very much. So, I don't know. I just, yeah, all of that comes into this whole situation. And you know, now you look at it and you go, okay, this is, you know, they like what they have, and that's where they're going now. And we'll see how it works out for them overall.
The Cardinals can, then we will find out. Do you think that Kyler will have his practice window open to this week? There is a growing feeling without the Cardinals saying anything. It kind of sounded like it was going to be, well, who, I can't remember what Gannon said on the radio or what someone was saying, but I think it was Darren Urban was alluding to, based on the chatter around, is that between Monday and Tuesday was going to be an interesting couple of days. It would be fun. It would be great if they get Kyler. But then it's going to be interesting to see what is the plan with Kyler if they open this practice window, because you open that practice window, that means you are taking snaps away from Josh Dobbs, especially if you intend on him practicing, unless you just plan on week one, you're doing individual work with the team and kind of go from there, and maybe you have him do some of the walkthrough work. I don't know, but I would guess they want a couple of weeks, as we mentioned already, but and I guess the issue is, because this is a new offense for him, would they activate him and then basically give him the Dobbs treatment in Seattle? I personally, would I object to that? No, I'd welcome Kyler's back, as long as he's physically, if he's physically fine and he's mentally ready to compete, why not let him make some mistakes against a team they're not going to win anyway?
Yeah, exactly, and get healthy in doing so.
Or crazy thought, they do the left guard approach. You know how they've been bringing in, it's like Elijah Wilkinson comes out every game for two series.
We thought he got benched finally because he was playing poorly.
But no, it's you know, they always, coaches are like that. So I it's very interesting. I, never having coached myself, never having played organized football, it's interesting how the starting offensive line dynamic is. Once you've picked a starter and everyone on the outside seems to think, that dude sucks, they don't move him. They're like, we right. Like what he's doing. Like, really well, the guys behind him are that much worse?
I've said it before, a lot of it's just continuity. Like, that's just what teams want from their offensive line. And so
is that a slow play by getting daily snaps, like when they're getting Cologne snaps, is to make it the adjustment less abrupt if they make a move over the next 2-3 weeks to phase Wilkinson out?
Probably. I mean, if they truly want to move on from him, I would say it's probably the reason why they're doing it that way, because they just are trying as much as they can to get him in sync with what is working, you know. And I know people will disagree and they'll be like, oh, it's not working. It is, though. Like, their
offensive line's not the problem.
Oh, their running game's been good. And so, you know, that's how you have to look at it.
Well, what I got off the track was, would you consider having Kyler come in for a pair of series?
Here's my question. And I'm curious what you think. do you think that would work with Dobbs? Like, don't you think that it would potentially cause an issue? Because especially it when he plays well on a series, people are going to be like, why are you going back to Dobbs, right? Like,
I could see that, but, like, they've been so very deliberate and intentional about a lot of their plans. I could see them going, unless, like, we're only limiting him to this number of snaps, treating it like a preseason game, essentially.
Yeah, and that could be something that they – but that's the thing. Don't you think they'd have to come out and say that, like, before? Like, no matter how well
he's... I think that he wouldn't... I don't think Gannon would say it. I think that would come out later in the week.
That's kind of what I meant. Like, it would have to be agreed upon between him and the team.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, I would totally see that as being... because of course, I will say this. Why? Why are the Cardinals like this as an organization? Why not tell your local media guys what the plan is? And then let Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter report it nationally. Why? Why? You have local reporters you can tell.
Right.
Like, you could say, okay, here's the plan. So we've opened Kyler's window. We do have a plan for him in to play a couple of series, depending on how that goes, to give him some game reps. But he will not play the entire game.
Right, and that's I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
But, I mean, would that put them at a competitive disadvantage against the Seahawks? I don't know. But they don't know what series Kyler's going to be in, and it would force them to prepare for both Kyler and Dobbs, right?
And we've already seen them do that once.
the Commanders weren't doing extra game prep to prepare for Clayton Tune.
Yeah, like we said before.
The other one, I don't anticipate, like, I don't know what other roster moves are coming other than Garrett Williams' practice window opened up 2 weeks ago. So he's got a 21-day window, which means I think by Monday or Tuesday next week, he has to be activated to the 53-man roster. Would you guess that's going to happen this week? Especially, especially because Antonio Hamilton's groin injury, I wonder how serious that is.
Yeah, and there, I mean, I called that in the game, right? When
he came up lame on that, you know, yeah. He grabbed his groin, you're like, oh, Garrett Williams next week.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you look at that and, I mean, it makes it tough, man. Like, it's a tough situation and we'll see how it works out. But I think overall, you know, thus far, you have to look at it and say that they'll probably have to, they'll probably need a guy to replace him, right?
Yeah, and I mean, technically they can use Thomas, and they brought up Bobby Price last week, and they brought in Quavion White before, but it seems like it's about the time to bring Garrett Williams on, and maybe they give him that sixth defensive back role that Hamilton had early in this season. So maybe you have to, like, if Jalen Thompson is back. We don't know what that's going to look like. If Jalen Thompson's back, this makes goes a lot easier because then they're using three safeties instead of using three and four cornerbacks. Then you stick with Marco and Kittrell, and then you can bring in Williams as the dime back like they used Hamilton earlier this season. But I'm super interested kind of the play for that because I want to know what their plan is for Williams this year because we would have figured had he been healthy in camp that we'd be looking perhaps more at Williams as being the starter than Kittrell, wouldn't you guess?
Yeah, you would think so.
Anything else of note before we wrap this show up and pass it on to our preview predictions and props for the show Thursday night?
No, I think, you just look at it. It's been a great exercise in patience. And that's something that I think we knew was going to happen, but at times it's been a little more trying than even we expected. Right.
Right. It's, you know, it's been a roller coaster, even with the low expectations we had. So that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Seared podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. This is episode 474. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rue. We'll be back again in a couple of days for our preview, picks, and prop bet show. We'll see you in a couple of days.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Seared podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.